there shouldn't be an expectation that everyone is best friends and everyone is cozied up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if we had some expectations of just like, oh, I am going to get upset. Hi, guys. Welcome to VoiceOver, Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark that led to cinematic epiphanies. And it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today's movie is Terms of Endearment from 1983. It's originally adapted from a Larry McMurtry novel by James Brooks. And in fact, this is James Brooks' first film to both write and direct. The film is about a mother-daughter relationship, how these two women over decades handle aging, handle illness, handle marriages and relationships with men and relationships with children. The storied, the legendary Shirley MacLaine plays the mother, Aurora. Shirley MacLaine had started in The Trouble with Harry with Hitchcock and then went to Billy Wilder's The Apartment, The Children's Hour, Sweet Charity, and in modern Hollywood had been in Being There. So quite the career, incredible actress. Sister of Warren Beatty, in case you're curious. The daughter is played by Deborah Winger, who before this had been an urban cowboy and an officer and a gentleman. After this film, she might be best known for Shadowlands from 1993 with Anthony Hopkins. The film won big at the Oscars. Best film, best directing, best adapted screenplay, best actress for Shirley MacLaine. Both Deborah Winger and Shirley MacLaine had been nominated. And Best Supporting Actor for Jack Nicholson. The film also features John Lithgow and Jeff Daniels in his first film role. All in all, it's one of the great films of the 1980s, and watching it is like stepping into a time capsule, not just because of the hair and the clothes, but really because of the attitudes about women, children, marriage, love, romance. So we're gonna talk through that whole movie. If you haven't seen it before, I recommend you pause, you grab some Kleenex, and you make your way through it. My guest today is Hubble Palmer. He's a screenwriter best known for the Minecraft movie. Also, Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life, Masterminds, and the Oscar-nominated short film, 95 Senses. And all of these he's written with his collaborator, Chris Bowman. As I said, we're going to talk about the whole film, and after our conversation, stick around for more recommendations.
We all remember the movie as like the one where it's about this sad death that happens at the end. But it reminds me of It's a Wonderful Life in a lot of ways, where It's a Wonderful Life has this bookend where we're sort of told George is in trouble.
Right.
You know, but for an hour and a half of the movie, it's just about this guy's regular life. The third act is what we remember. We kind of think the whole movie is like that. Same with Terms of Endearment.
Yes.
We think that the whole movie is like, this woman's dying. But most of the movie is just about moving away from mom and these separate adventures that happen in different states. This is a real phone movie. Like,
yes.
They're on the phone a lot.
So I rewatched it this weekend, and I remember getting to like minute 85, and I was like, there's cancer here somewhere.
Yeah.
But where's the cancer?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Like, you focus on that sort of dramatic, the sadness at the end, but the whole movie is like, here I'm trying to figure out my relationship with my mom and my relationship with my husband and my relationship with my son. And parallel that, this woman who's trying to figure out, who am I now that I don't have this family close to me? You know, there's some comedy around how Shirley MacLaine's character has all these men floating around.
I read something from James L. Brooks who said Shirley got the part because she understood that this was a comedy. And I think she really does. Everything about this movie feels real to me. There are moments that are well played for laughs, like when she's talking to Jack Nicholson saying, and hoping to get to bed early, you know, like basically, I'll see you later tonight.
Right.
And then the kids are like, Grandma, Grandma, Grandma.
Grandma, grandma.
And she has this sort of like slow burn. where it's like, oh, I don't like to be reminded that I'm a grandma.
Or the scene where their first date, she comes out and she's got like all this hair and she's got the flouncy dress, and then they're going to be in a convertible where everything gets blown to pieces, and she has to go into the restaurant and take this fake hair off and put it in her purse and come out a little humbled, right?
I love that scene.
So talk to me about why you chose Terms of Endearment for this discussion.
When I was 6 years old in 1983, my mom died of cancer. And that's the same year this movie came out. My mom died in September, and then this movie came out in November. And it was like, whoa, they made a movie about something that just happened to me?
Right.
You know? So it was sort of this, like, I don't want to watch that movie, this cursed movie for a long time. And my sisters, I think a lot of them still haven't seen it. I eventually watched it in my 20s. I remember really connecting with that ending scene where she's talking to her sons, you know, because my mom, when she was getting ready to say goodbye, she took us in one at a time into her hospital room and sort of like had a final talk with each of us.
Wow.
You know? And I think I was more at the maturity level of the younger boy, Teddy, in this movie, and just remember it being like a really sweet thing. But my sister, she was just older than me, maybe 2 years older than me. She was just telling me the other day how, like, she had a better sense of what was going on when she said goodbye. And this was a final goodbye. And, like, she remembers hearing the adults kind of talking in code to each other. But the code wasn't good enough that she couldn't capture what was happening, you know?
This film is best known for the relationship between the mother and the daughter, between Shirley MacLaine and Deborah Winger. But when Tommy, the older boy, starts to critique his mother in various ways throughout the film, like, I sat up straight, like, oh. When you hear, oh, it's about a character, and she's a young mother, and she's going to die of cancer, you sort of expect a lot more sweetness.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot more sentimentality. And here she has a son who's like, you know, you're driving Dad away, and, you know, why don't you have any money for the groceries, and I'm going to, like, stand in the corner and glare at you, right?
Yeah.
So that's a fascinating choice, and I actually really love that choice.
Me too.
And I think I love it because I didn't reach that kind of relationship with my mother until I was probably a later teenager, when I was like, wait a minute, I don't know if I like all your choices.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're impacting me, and I don't have any control. So to see it play out on screen, I just really resonated with, one, feeling like you're doing this, like you're poking at your parent, but also kind of how sad it is. Like, I'm mourning for them that,
Tommy, be sweet. Be sweet. And stop trying to pretend like you hate me. I mean, it's silly.
I like you.
Okay, then will you listen especially close?
What?
You listen real hard?
I said what?
I know you like me. I know it. For the last year or two, you've been pretending like you hate me. I love you very much. I love you as much as I love anybody. As much as I love myself. And in a few years, when I haven't been around to be on your tail about something or irritating you, you're gonna remember. You're gonna remember that time that I bought you the baseball glove when you thought we were too broke. You know? Or when I read you those stories. Or when I let you goof off instead of mowing the lawn, lots of things like that. And you're gonna realize that you love me. And maybe you're gonna feel badly because you never told me. But don't. I know that you love me. So don't ever do that to yourself, all right?
Okay.
Okay?
I said okay.
Okay, you two should run along. Take care. Give me a kiss. I was so scared, but I think it went really well, don't you?
This is a moment when you should feel close, and yet you are being standoffish.
You know, this is one of those movies where, like, no one is really the villain. You know, like, Flap has affairs, but Emma has affairs too. But they're doing these things and arguing about money and all this stuff. And I think the kids are, as is true of kids, they're picking up on a lot more of what's going on than the parents think the kids are picking up. And also, I think that it's common for the child to blame the mother for things because maybe they're around more, even though obviously this is a messy marriage where both parties are
at fault.
Yeah. How did you relate to the relationship between Aurora and Emma as far as your relationship with your mom?
In a lot of ways, Emma is really even. Like, we can see Aurora making all these comments to her, and Emma is able to say,
you know, nobody wants a girl who's washed out and tired looking all the time. I just drove about 1,000 miles. Besides, all the men love me the way I am, Mother.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just drove 1,000 miles. Of course I don't look stunning and beautiful. Like, leave me alone.
And
also, she has this ability to say, yeah, I've always been a disappointment to you somehow, and kind of laugh it off. Like, that to me was really interesting to watch, right? There were no tears between these two over, we weren't best friends.
Emma will have these moments where she's like, I'm not talking to Mom, and then she'll get on the phone with Mom and like, oh, I gotta tell you about, you know, what happened.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. I think what really helps the characterization of Shirley MacLaine's Aurora is the opening scene when she's...
This is a perfect opening scene for a movie.
Yeah, talk about it.
There's sort of this idea in screenwriting that your opening scene should sort of sum up or be a perfect encapsulation of the relationships that are going to come after it. And so in this opening scene, Emma's a baby and Aurora is worried. Her husband's still alive, Albert Brooks, I guess.
Yeah.
And she's like, Rudyard, she's not breathing. She's not breathing. And she's just so worried about her that she's willing to pinch her awake to make sure she's okay. And I feel like Aurora loves Emma, but she's also neurotic and is, you know, too involved in her life. Two strong opinions about what Emma should be doing. It's that she's willing to inflict pain to be close to her to make sure that things are okay.
One of the scenes that kind of blew my mind was, one, the conversation where Aurora says to Emma,
I'm totally convinced if you marry Flap Horton tomorrow, it will be a mistake of such gigantic proportions. It will ruin your life and make wretched your destiny.
Why are you doing this to me?
You are not special enough to overcome a bad marriage. Emma, use your brains. Flap is limited. He hasn't got any imagination. Even at this age, all he wants is a secure teaching job.
Mother.
And again, it's somehow Emma is able to have this good humor for a situation that, frankly, for me, would have been incredibly upsetting. And I kept thinking about that as I was watching the movie. Even though Shirley MacLaine's character is neurotic, she is present. Mm-hmm. And Emma can always trust that. She always knows her mom is there for her, even if her mom is full of nettles and barbs. Having spent some time on Reddit reading about what people say about their relationships, and having seen this trend in our culture right now to sort of, I'm just cutting that person off.
Yeah.
I need to draw boundaries for myself, which I totally agree with. Boundaries are super important. And that means we're never seeing that family member again. There shouldn't be an expectation that everyone is best friends and everyone is cozied up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if we had some expectations of just like, oh, I am going to get upset. Oh, they are going to say things that make me annoyed, and I'm going to do that to them, actually, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's good.
I'm not the innocent victim in this relationship. I do things too. And I wonder if we just had a little more of that discussion happening socially, if maybe we could repair some relationships instead of just like chucking people out on their ears.
Oh, totally. I always tell my kids, because they fight, when you're grown up, you are going to be each other's best friends. These are the people you can relate to the most in the world.
Yeah, because they were there.
Yeah.
So I was emailing you and I said, one of the things I like about this movie is just how honest it is about women, right? No woman here is perfect. No woman here is glamorous. And
they talk about hitting their kids, and then Shirley MacLaine slaps Tommy at the end. And that looks like a real slap to me.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I love the scene where Deborah Winger yells at her son in the parking lot.
Wait over by the car a second, honey.
Come on.
Wait over by the car, honey.
No, come on.
Wait over by the car, honey.
But I...
Wait over by the car, honey. Over by the car. Now. Now. Now.
Nice boys. You're great with them, too. Really.
Yes, this is like laugh out loud because one, I was sort of uncomfortable, but mm-hmm. two, I was like, I can't believe I'm seeing this happen. You know, like what? So she's meeting John Lithgow, who's going to be a romantic interest, which mm-hmm. is just hilarious to say, right? John yeah. Lithgow, the romantic interest. And they're kind of making a little fun of him, too, throughout the
yeah.
film.
Yeah.
It's kind of a great scene.
So you feel like this is an honest movie about women. And the book's by a man, Larry yep. McMurtry. It's directed and adapted by James L. Brooks. So as a man, to me, these are like my two favorite female characters. How, as a woman, did you... Was there any way in which this was like two men's version of?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I was having this reaction of like, wow, I just love all this sort of nakedness, as it were.
Yeah.
Maybe what I'm talking about is the lack of sentimentality. Here's a film where it's like, yeah, these two people obviously love each other and they obviously have moments where they cannot get along. And I just found that like great.
Yeah, yeah. I guess one of the things I like about this, so much of the drama is just stuff that happens to everybody. So I've watched this at different times in my life and related to different characters. When I watched this maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, my wife and I were in the phase of parenting where it's just like there's never enough money. You know, you go to the store and you're embarrassed. We could always pay for our groceries, but sometimes we had to use like WIC coupons or whatever like that. I really related to the Emma character that time. But the last time I watched it, I was like, I'm older than the Jack Nicholson character, at least how old he was when he made it, 45 right. or so. I'm just younger than the Shirley MacLaine character. She's supposed to be 50, I guess, although she's lying about her age. It really struck me, like I really saw the movie from that older perspective now. Even though we're not quite empty nesters yet, this last time I was like, this Shirley MacLaine performance, because I always thought, why did Shirley MacLaine win the Oscar when Deborah Winger is so luminous
right.
in this movie. It's like such a full of life performance. But this time I was like, this is the best acting I've ever seen. She plays the comedy so well. And then this is the scene where I cry every time now is, so Emma has just passed and she's right. like,
so stupid. So stupid. Somehow I thought when she finally went, that it would be a relief. Oh, my sweet darling.
She sort of has that moment where she hugs Flap for the first time. And I was like, oh, man, this is so well done. James L. Brooks makes so many smart choices to avoid this feeling like love story or something like that, like where all the drama is around like someone dying. She never loses her hair. I know my mom.
The chemo would have done that.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think it's kind of a smart choice to not do that because I think it could have been distracting and like every choice surrounding Emma's illness is like the better version of what's been done in other movies.
You yeah. know?
And so I think that Shirley MacLaine changes more in the movie. Emma sort of stays the same. She makes choices, but I feel like they all come from the same character place. She's kind of born with the gift of like she loves herself
yeah.
and she embraces life. And then Jack Nicholson won for Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
And he was nominated against Lithgow. Jeff Daniels not nominated.
Which is an interesting choice because I think Flap is a thankless role.
It's a thankless role.
But it's actually so important,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's doing a lot of stuff in there to make us see what she likes, but also see why he drives her crazy and,
yeah.
you know.
Jack Nicholson is so charismatic.
Right. And he was a massive star at yeah. the time.
Yeah,
he's the biggest star there, really.
Right. I think Brooks said that casting was impossible for him because he was like, it has to be someone at this level of stardom for this Garrett role.
Yeah.
He knew it had to be someone who was a big star, but no one of that stature is going to accept the third lead in a movie. But luckily, Nicholson, who has always been really smart about selecting his roles and paying more attention to the material. He famously turned down The Godfather and The Sting. He was like, I knew they were going to be hits, but I was more interested in doing Chinatown.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, which one do we watch in film classes?
Exactly. But he said yes to this, and I think it was a smart move. I feel like it revitalized his career.
Well, I think it's interesting because he plays, quote unquote, the astronaut, mm-hmm. the character is supposed to be out of this world, literally, mm-hmm. fantastic, macho guy who brings with him, as you said, all this charisma and this sense of like, oh, this is someone who's just amazing. So he has to have that star power when he walks on the screen.
Totally.
At the same time, everything he does just chips away at that sort of facade of like, he's the coolest guy we know. And it becomes like, oh, really? Is that really who he truly is? You know, like his coarse behavior with younger women and, you know, the way he talks to Aurora, though.
He's so gross. Yeah. But did you like him or not?
I ultimately liked them together.
Yeah.
That's what I liked, right?
Can I make another point about Flap? I think James L. Brooks is smart not to make him – he does the most despicable things in the movie. Like, he gives up his children at the
end. Yes. You know? I want to talk about that.
And yet I think we never really view him as, like, a villain. And it's probably because of the casting. I don't think he's a terrible father necessarily, but the fact that he cheats on Emma and – you know, it's just this bookworm who never comes out of the library. And then he's like, he's willing to give up his kids at the end. I think that's just, it's a little harder to get on board with than even the John Lithgow character who, you know, is just this sort of dopey, lovesick character. From today's perspective, a father saying, no, these kids should be raised elsewhere.
Yeah.
Feels really wrong. I think back then that was when a mom dies. I think it was more of an open discussion like.
Flap. Patsy wants to raise Melanie and maybe the boys. I think they should be with me, don't you?
What can you be thinking about?
Raising three children, working full time and chasing women requires a lot more energy than you have. You know, one of the nicest qualities about you has always been that you recognized your weaknesses. Don't lose that quality now when you need it the most.
I never thought I was the sort of man who'd give up his kids.
It's a lot of work. As hard as you think it is, you end up wishing it were that easy.
Where do you want them?
I really don't think they should be with you, honey.
The dad, oh, he's too busy. There's no way he could.
How
care
could he possibly?
And I think when my mom died, there was briefly a discussion of like with my mom's parents and brothers and sisters like, hey, you know, I don't know if Kent Palmer can take care of six kids. Luckily, we ended up staying with my dad. But I think there was some sort of like offer of like, hey, maybe we could divide and conquer with your kids. We could take a few of them over here and a few of them over here.
Based on my own childhood, I know that that was an open discussion. My mom had a 3-year-old and then she had twins and she was not even 21. Mm. And there was discussion of like, you guys are already on food stamps. Maybe what we do is your sister takes one of the twins. Like that was an open discussion. Maybe we send the kids out till you guys get on your feet. People talked like that.
Yeah.
We don't do it today. Mm-mm. But I have to say, watching that discussion happen on screen, my mouth was really on the floor. So I was wondering what you felt like as a father watching that.
I can't imagine ever doing that. Like sometimes I observe that my kids communicate with her more and she's the one that they turn to if they need something. She's a stay-at-home mom and I work a lot, and so it makes sense to me that their relationship would be closer in some ways. I accept that even though I'm a little jealous of it, you know? But there's no way in heck that if my wife were to get really sick that I would ever consider anything. But I pretty much just devote all my time to my kids, I think, as much time as I could.
It wouldn't be business as usual. I'm an academic over here, so I'm going to go keep doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this appears on the Writers Guild of America 101 Greatest Screenplays.
Oh.
Alongside Broadcast News, but that's slightly higher.
I love Broadcast News.
So would you rate Broadcast News above this? Would you like it better?
Well, I just think they're talking about completely different things.
Yeah.
One is an out-and-out comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, Holly Hunter saying,
it must be nice to always believe you know better, to always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
It's one of the best things that James L. Brooks ever gave us, right?
And I think that movie definitely has more of his DNA in it. This is an adaptation. And that one, I mean, he worked on it like for so long.
I just love the flop part. Sweat scene.
That's amazing, yeah. So what would your Letterboxd rating be for this? What would you give this out of 5 stars?
I would give it four.
Four.
And part of it goes back to what you were saying about Shirley MacLaine. Mm-hmm. And being Shirley MacLaine's age and looking at this woman who is going through some of the hardest things that we ask people to do. And she's trying to figure out who she is. For a long time, she got to be Emma's mom. And she seemed really happy with that. That's all she really wanted. And then Emma goes off, and now she's got to figure out who she is, how she relates to people. And as you said, she's funny. And the film pokes most fun at her than anyone else in a lot of ways. But she has this integrity about it that makes you realize, like, yeah, that is a really funny situation, but we're not supposed to see her humiliated. Or the performance won't allow this woman to be humiliated. Even though that's what could have happened.
Well, and there's that moment where she says, I feel humiliated. But she sort of rebounds from that.
Yeah.
Right?
But the fact that she can say that.
Yeah.
There's something about how well this character is written and how Shirley MacLaine plays her that I think is just, like, I wanted to take notes.
So this time I was like, maybe during the middle section of the movie, we're less interested in everything that's happening in Des Moines and more interested in what's happening in Houston. You know, like, so Shirley MacLaine's story really picks up and we're like, oh man, I can't wait till we cut back to
more scenes
with her and Garrett, where Deborah Winger's story is more like depressing struggles. Her affair is not as exciting as...
No. Well, it's John Lithgow.
Right, yeah. It's John Lithgow and...
Watching it, I kept thinking, oh, I just wish she wasn't doing this.
Yeah.
Even though the film is setting it up as a parallel to her husband and even though the film is saying this in some ways is very harmless, me as a person was like... Yeah.
Because adultery is wrong.
Adultery is wrong.
Yeah.
Also, your kids kind of need you.
Yeah.
And I would say that to Flap, too. Your kids kind of need you. If you could leave all the extramarital stuff behind and just come home, a lot of problems would be solved here.
Why do you think she never tells Flap about the affair?
That's really interesting, right? Because at the very end, he's kind of apologizing for his adultery.
Who am I if I'm not the man who's failing Emma?
You didn't fail me, Flap.
No, well, I don't want to talk about this. I feel like I'm sucking after forgiveness, which I probably am.
You were no more terrible than I was.
No, except for the cheating.
You're right. Let's not do this. Look, we had problems. It was never over whether we loved each other.
She gets this look on her face.
You're right. Why don't we shouldn't get into it or something like that.
We don't have to talk about that.
That's
a
good comic moment. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, what is he going to gain?
Why does it feel, for her, from the movie's perspective, we know this because of the music cues. Why does it feel like Flap's affair is worse than her affair?
Because it's being told from her perspective. So what we get is he's cheating and he's leaving me with all of these kids and all of this struggle and there's not enough money and yet he's going off and doing whatever he wants. And then we sort of think of her affair as, well, it's my turn.
Yeah.
And then because it's John Lithgow and because we actually don't see any kind of sexual graphic material
although he does say we have committed adultery.
Yes, he does say that. But I think that's being played for laughs too, right?
Yeah.
What we see is hand-holding in a restaurant, kind of giggling with each other.
Yeah.
And even Flap, we don't see anything upsetting or we just know that there's this graduate student on campus that he wants to make a life with.
Yeah.
Though as a married person of certain religious values, that's not how I felt. I felt like, oh,
don't do it.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that at all.
You'll regret it.
Yeah.
That's my big message to people about adultery. You'll regret it.
You'll regret it.
Yeah. Can I say sort of a closing statement about this movie?
Yes, please.
You know, we have this ideal in film of like the neorealist film. And I think that the idea of that is like they're showing this is what it's really like. But I find those movies to be awesome, but not relatable. This person isn't you. I find this movie to be the closest to real life of any movie. Like, I watch this movie and I'm like, oh, that's what real life is like. And I think people could say that about a lot of different movies. This happens to be the one for me where it's like, okay, yeah, it's also like real life plus movie stars. Like, you recast all these parts with unknowns and it's not as good.
Thanks to Hubble Palmer for pointing me towards this film. I'm still trying to articulate what I saw in the movie about the portrayal of women, and it might be that these women are written as entire people. I think often when we see movies about mothers, those movies claim that the woman's entire identity is bound up in that maternal role. And often it's because of what the plot is doing, right? The plot is saying your child is in danger, therefore you have to become the mother bear. And this movie shows us that women's lives are actually very complex and that they're part of a web of relationships and concerns and worries, of which motherhood is one and an important one, but not the only one. So, how about some recommendations? If you want all in on melodrama about mother-daughter relationships, I'm going to recommend Imitation of Life, both the 1934 version with Claudette Colbert and Louise Beavers as two single mothers, one white, one black, who band together to make it in this world with only their wits and a pancake recipe to guide them, as well as Douglas Sirk's 1959 remake with Lana Turner and a young Sandra Dee, if only to see how racial politics devolved over the 20 years between these films. While both films are concerned with the black mother trying to connect with her daughter who wants to pass as white, the 1959 version is also interested in keeping racial hierarchies in place. Watch them both, write me an essay or a blog post or a YouTube reel on what you see as the differences, but both movies are very concerned about how women connect to their children in spite of all the challenges around them. Whether that challenge is racism or whether that challenge is getting food on the table by the end of the day. If you're interested in a movie about how we hold space for all of our different needs and desires, I'm going to recommend the 2025 film Rental Family with Brendan Fraser. The film's about an American actor in Japan. He's lonely and unsuccessful, and he starts working in a firm that supplies actors to different social situations. Do you want an apology from your long-lost son? Do you want a reporter to fawn over your once-famous father? Do you need a groom for a wedding that will make your parents happy and keep them from losing face? You can rent that person. The film explores how our American actor changes and grows in all of these disparate emotional situations. One, in fact, where he plays an absentee father who reunites with his 8-year-old daughter, and what he learns about himself and how he learns to be a better man. That's it for us today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley. VoiceOver is a production of BYU Radio and is edited by Spencer Boyer.